Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thank you for spending part of your day with me. It's beginning to look a lot like awards season. In the past week, the Gotham Independent Film Awards were handed out. The Critics' Choice Association released its nominations on Sunday. The LA Critics did their thing over the weekend as well. And yesterday, the nominations for the 2020 Golden Globes were announced. And in the case of the latter, there was quite a bit of controversy. The Golden Globes once again failed to nominate any female directors in film or TV, when honestly, there were quite a few out there who were doing spectacular work. Greta Gerwig, anyone? Ava DuVernay on line five? Olivia Wilde? The LA Film Critics and the Critics Circle offered a bit more in the way of diversity, giving accolades to the films including Hustlers, The Farewell, and Diane. And among all three groups, however, Marriage Story, Parasite, and The Irishman led the film categories. Joining us now to talk awards and what it all means is Vox culture writer and friend of the show, Constance Grady. Constance, nice to see you.
Thanks so much for having me.
So we'll talk about the snubs in a minute, but were there any surprises in the Golden Globe nominees for you?
I think the big surprise for a lot of people was Joker getting nods, not just for Joaquin Phoenix's performance, which was expected, but also getting nominated for Best Picture and Best Director, especially since, as you've already mentioned, there were so many snubs in the directing category. That was a movie that really became a big signifier in the culture wars when it came out. Honestly, even before it came out, there were some people who were saying that it was glamorizing the idea that a disenfranchised white man turning to violence would be like this great, reasonable, laudable act. And some people saying that it was the big, gritty prestige treatment that superhero movies deserved. And then when it actually came out, the critical consensus was that it was not really even interesting enough to justify that level of controversy. So for it to make such a surprising sweep in a category that saw so many big films overlooked was really surprising, I think, for a lot of people.
Do you think it seems to me that it really comes down to Joaquin Phoenix's performance?
I mean,
that really maybe it was enough to sweep it into the best film category.
That performance really is undeniable, and certainly, you know, a director does a lot of work to pull a performance out of an actor. Having said that, I think there are a lot of other films in that were in the conversation for Best Director or Best Picture that didn't get pulled out that have really fantastic performances as well. You know, you could talk about It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, the Mr. Rogers movie starring Tom Hanks. Mm-hmm. Tom Hanks turns in a great performance, and he was nominated as well. But the director, Marielle Heller, who did a lot of work with Hanks as well, was not nominated.
So let's talk about that. No women directors nominated. You had Hustlers, The Farewell, Booksmart, Little Women, mm-hmm. When They See Us. What do you think was going on? I mean, this is speculation, but you are a culture writer.
Yeah. I think one of the big things to remember about the Golden Globes is the voting body for this award is super, super weird. It's the Hollywood Foreign Press Association is just 90-something people living in Southern California. Ostensibly, it's supposed to be journalists for foreign publications. A lot of the members of the award body actually aren't. And because it's a weird number in 90 people, it's like not really enough to get a consensus pick on the films of the year. You know, the Academy, in comparison, has like 8,000 people in its body. So you get like this weird sort of personal preferences can really tilt things really strongly one way or the other.
So that's why it's kind of idiosyncratic?
Yeah, their picks tend to be very quirky and unusual compared to a lot of the other big award shows. And sometimes that means that they can recognize really, really cool TV. You know, there was a time when the Globes had a reputation for being much better on TV than the Emmys were. Like, the Emmys would nominate Modern Family over and over and over again. And the Globes were out there recognizing, you know, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend and Jane the Virgin and other critically acclaimed shows that never really got any Emmy love. But other times it means that the Globes will just completely shut out movies and TV shows that are really sort of in the middle of the conversation for no particular reason other than didn't really connect with the voting body. And kind of consistently, it seems that the voting body does not connect with movies directed by women.
The director of Honey Boy tweeted, "Good morning to everyone that's writing me about hashtag Golden Globes. I feel you, but know this. I was on the inside for the first time this year. They are not our people, and they do not represent us. Do not look for justice in the award system. We are building a new world." So this has sort of led to an interesting, you know, so much attention is given to the Golden Globes. But are they still relevant?
That's a good question. I think the Golden Globes' big claim to relevance is two things. First of all, they are very good at getting celebrities to show up. That does often drive a lot of their nomination decisions, or at least seems to. And that seems to be continuing to this year. You know, they've got George Clooney nominated for Catch-22, which I don't think anyone really remembers that TV show, but he produced it and directed it, so he'll show up. And they have a reputation for using that big celebrity group to really make a fun ceremony. You know, everyone drinks. A lot of times the hosting is a little aggressive. They're bringing Ricky Gervais back again this year, so we'll probably see more of that. It has a reputation for being a little bit of a wild ceremony, and people like it for that reason. The other thing that the Globes usually point to as their claim to relevance is predicting the Oscars. That one, there's a little bit less basis for that whole thing. They are, because they're the first major award show, they are part of setting the conversation for award season. And a lot of times it's possible that if the Golden Globes recognize kind of an underdog, then the Oscars might sit up and say, oh, okay, well, we'll take another look at that. And that can maybe launch a movie really into the conversation. But there is absolutely no overlap between the voting body for the Golden Globes and the voting body in the Academy. So they don't do a particularly good job of anticipating winners. Sometimes they anticipate the nominations, but generally there's not huge overlap.
But it does sound like in the cultural conversation they might have influence for some film that maybe was on the bubble or people thought, like, maybe I should check it out, that they might actually check it out now. Because it really comes down also to the Academy, what they actually see.
Yeah, exactly. And the Globes really benefit from timing there, because the ceremony this year is a couple of days before nominations close. And you just know there are going to be some members of the Academy who haven't had a chance to see everything, just sitting there with their ballot, filling it out.
My guest is Constance Grady. She is a culture reporter at Vox. We're talking about all of the nominations that have been going off in the past week or so. I do think it's interesting. We were talking in our meeting about with the producer about the idea that the Golden Globes, both achievement in film and TV, but that line seems really blurred these days. Is prestige TV at this point, a Golden Globe nomination for prestige TV, as good as one for film?
That's a really interesting question. I think
maybe valuable is a better word than good.
Yeah. I think one thing that's been interesting about this year is, as I mentioned earlier, the Globes really makes it a priority to bring in A-listers and movie stars. But that's getting more difficult to do in film, because so much of what Hollywood is interested in right now isn't really driven by movie stars anymore in the same way that it used to be 10, 20 years ago. More and more A-listers are turning to TV for their big prestigious projects. So if the Golden Globes wants to bring in movie stars, which they clearly do, they kind of have to nominate them for TV shows. However, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're nominating the same TV shows that critics are really loving. A good example would probably be The Morning Show on Apple TV Plus, which kind of got pretty lukewarm to downright negative reviews when it first came out. But the Golden Globes nominated Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon. Kind of interestingly, they nominated her for The Morning Show over Big Little Lies, which has been more generally beloved, I think. But that's sort of a way that they can get these big, giant celebrities into the conversation and onto their red carpet to drive press coverage without necessarily having to try to drag through the film landscape and find something with a movie star in it that's worthy of an award.
It's fun. Alan Sepinwall, who's sometimes a guest on this show, was up in arms about Watchmen being snubbed entirely. Were there any other like just real snubs that you thought, like, wow?
Oh, man. I mean, the Watchmen one really hurts.
That does hurt.
Although it is in many ways par for the course, because the Golden Globes is generally not a fan of genre TV. The other place where that shows is Game of Thrones and its final season getting barely anything. They got one nomination in acting for Kit Harington, who played Jon Snow, which is kind of just not necessarily a snub per se, because I think most audience members agree that this final season was not necessarily their best, but is very funny for a show that just dominated the conversation so thoroughly when it was on the air.
It's always interesting at the Golden Globes because they have this weird comedy category where you can find the strangest mishmashes of films up against each other. So you have Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood up against Knives Out, and then the Elton John biopic Rocket Man. How does that happen?
Oh, man. I mean, I think the Rocket Man one is sneaking in there because technically it's musical or comedy, and that one is a musical.
Musical or comedy. Yes. So those two are in the same category.
Yes, very, very strangely. A lot of times that's an excuse for them to just sneak in a movie that they want to nominate because it's filled with celebrities but isn't necessarily going to make it in drama category. I think the most egregious example of that I can think of is The Tourist from maybe 2009, which was a very mediocre movie, but it had Johnny Depp and Angelina Jolie in it, so they really, really wanted it in there. And it was like not funny. It was a thriller, but you know, that's where they shoved it in because that's where they could.
My guest is Constance Grady. She is a reporter for Vox. She reports on culture, and we're talking about all the award nominations. I've got one more Golden Globes question before we move on to the LA critics and Gotham. It's interesting, in the TV category, shows like Chernobyl and Netflix's The Crown and Unbelievable got a lot of nominations. These are all based on real life, real true stories. They're not fantasy. They're not escapism. What do you think is going on with us culturally and creatively that we are turning to real stories as opposed to fantasy like a Game of Thrones?
That's such an interesting question. It's not something I put together before, so this is a little off the cuff.
Go for it.
But I think that one thing that we've been talking a lot about for the past few years since the 2016 election as a culture is the problem of fake news and of stories that are dishonest and that represent the people that they're about poorly. Green Book is a good example of that conversation last year, which was based on a true story, but which the family of the subject of the story kept saying, like, no, this isn't really accurately telling the story. This is just telling us a fantasy about a white guy being really nice to a black guy when that's not actually what happened. So I think more and more we're interested in stories that look at the things that have happened to disenfranchised groups that have been kind of shoved under the rug and really pulling them out and looking at what makes them worth hearing and why we should stop ignoring them.
That's so interesting. And this is, again, I don't know if you've written about this yet, but there's a big controversy around this new film, Richard Jewell, right? So for people, so Richard Jewell was falsely accused of the Olympic bombing in Atlanta and Olympic Park. And there is a portrayal of a female reporter who has since passed away. And they suggest that she slept with an FBI agent to get information. And this didn't happen.
Yes, yes. My colleague Alyssa Wilkinson is writing about that one for Vox. It's definitely an interesting controversy because, especially because that's such a recurring trope in Hollywood movies about female journalists. For some reason, they're always sleeping with their sources, which is just a very bizarre thing.
Your hands are crunched up. I just want you to know that.
I know.
your hands are in a ball, as you said.
It's just that trope comes up all the time, and I can't even really figure out why, except that I guess it's supposed to be sexy because it crosses boundaries. But in this case, because it's made up about a real person who is not alive to defend herself, and it's a big violation of journalistic ethics, and she did so much good work on that story, I think it's becoming quite a bit more controversial than it would be if it were in like a frothy rom-com.
Yeah, there's a lawsuit involved in all of that. Let's talk about the LA critics. A lot more diversity in the LA critics nominations. What are a few that you think really stand out?
So the LA critics is kind of a fun one because it's this very small voting body of print journalists. So they get to focus on the kind of movies that critics are super into that bigger award bodies don't necessarily always like. So they recognize Parasite a lot this year, which is a movie that critics have loved, but is like a weirdo sort of horror movie with allegorical elements, which I think we saw with Get Out a couple years ago. Just also obviously a great horror movie with a lot to say allegorically about race in America. larger award bodies are not very good at recognizing movies like that. There's a long history of bias against genre movies, and particularly horror, and dismissing those as B-movies. So this is a chance for those kinds of movies to get recognition from groups that really appreciate them.
And also it's an opportunity for someone who is not necessarily like Jennifer Lopez, who's an incredibly talented person and had early career success as an actress, but then kind of fell into the rom-com morass and gave him this tremendous performance in Hustlers.
Yes. I actually think there's a strong chance that J-Lo is going to pick up an Oscar nomination this year. She's really has a very good comeback narrative. I hesitate to say comeback because she's been an A-list celebrity for 20 years now.
But a serious actress comeback.
Yes, exactly. She's gotten such good reviews in Hustlers, and it's such a great performance. I think there's a good chance that she'll make it.
Let's talk about the Critics' Choice Awards. This one, actually, Little Women. You think it's going to be an Oscar contender? We're kind of excited around here because, of course, it's our book club pick this month.
Oh, fantastic. I think it is in so many ways a classic Oscars contender. It's based on a classic. It has this giant star-studded cast. Greta Gerwig is coming right off of Lady Bird, which was so acclaimed. I think the only thing that could hold it back is there's this prejudice against women's stories so often, and it's such a women's story. There's kind of the famous account from the 1994 Little Women starring Winona Ryder, where when that was shown to the executives at Sony, which was producing it, they all were kind of like, ugh, this women's movie, we're not really looking forward to it. And then when it finished, they were all like, oh, this is actually brilliant and we love it. And they were all just blown away by the death at the end, which I will not spoil, because they were men, so they'd never read it growing up and they didn't know it was coming.
That's so funny. Let's talk about Sam Mendes' war pick, epic 1917, that received 8 nominations from the Critics' Choice. How is this different from other war epics?
So I have not seen this movie, so I shouldn't talk too much about it. I will be very honest about that. But I think that we're coming off of a long, we're just a few years out from Dunkirk. There's a long period of very flashy, the man's inhumanity to man war movies. And I think this one is trying a little more to move away from those images, but I haven't seen it, so I shouldn't be too specific.
Okay, so we'll table that for next time. The Gotham Awards, this is selected by distinguished juries and presented in New York City. They consider itself the home of independent film. It was the first awards of the season, and I thought it was really interesting that Awkwafina received Best Actress for The Farewell, Lu Wang's story about a family that lies to the matriarch that she's dying and she seems to be doing just fine, and they throw a pretend wedding. What were your thoughts about some of the winners at the Gotham Awards?
The Gotham Awards are such a fun awards. So the way they work is the nominees are chosen by a small committee of about 5, usually members of the press, critics, and journalists. And then from that pool, the winners are chosen by people who are practitioners in the field. So ideally, you get the best of both the Critic Awards and the Guild Awards. And because it's small committees, they can be very intentional about what they're choosing to honor. And you don't get weirdo wild cards thrown in. I think one thing that's worth noting is that even in this small award ceremony that is intentionally dedicated to shows that don't have particularly big budgets, there's a budget cap, so something like The Irishman couldn't be nominated, which has a reported budget of, I think, $175 million. You're still seeing the Marriage Story really, really run away with things here.
Yes. Adam Driver, Noah Baumbach, the film itself, all won awards.
Yeah, and that is shaping up to be kind of the story of the award season. And I think that it's a sign both of Netflix's dominance and of what audiences are looking for this season. I think Marriage Story has really managed to capture the conversation because, in part, it's a Netflix movie. You can watch it over the weekend, and then you can go on social media and have your opinion about, whose side is the movie on, who wins the divorce. It's kind of started to become the movie of the season for a lot of people for those reasons, I think.
Constance Grady is a Vox writer. She writes about culture. Constance, thank you so much for coming on in.
Thank you for having me.
All Up next, WNYC planning editor Kate Hines gives us the scoop on what the newsroom is covering this week, including bail reform in New York, driver's licenses for immigrants, and the Christmas bird count. That's next on All of It. This is All of It on WNYC. And hey, book lovers, we've got another exciting live event coming up, and we think you'll really enjoy this festive evening. Mark your calendars. Tuesday, December 17th, we are celebrating a holiday classic and our December Get Lit with All of It book club selection, Louisa May Alcott's Little Women. We'll be doing this live in the green space. I mean, are you really excited for Greta Gerwig's film adaptation? Want to read Little Women to your kids? Have you already read Little Women more times than you can count? Then you'll love our Little Women celebration in the green space. I'll be speaking with authors Kate Bullock and Anne Boyd-Rue, who have both spent a lot of time writing and thinking about Little Women and why this book still matters. And there's going to be a special performance of holiday classics and some original Christmas songs from singer Molly Birch. You're not going to want to miss that. Plus, if you bring your whole book club along, you can reserve a table and you'll get a free bottle of wine. So head to wnyc.org/thegreenspace to buy tickets for our December 17th Little Women event. And follow us on Instagram at All of It WNYC to keep up with our Get Lit book club. We can't wait to see you there. Come house if you go to Houston.